Russ's Tool Shed.
Hello, Jacksonville! How you doing out here? Hey, look what we got here. We got these Russ's Tool Shed t-shirts. How about that? Can you get this over here? Can you get that, Randy? Look at that, man. Who wants one of these, huh? There you go. All right. And we got water bottles. There you go. There you go. All right. Who wants Matt? Well, thanks for coming here for this episode 5 of All About the Tool Stand.
It's been 5 already.
I tell you, it's been a fun run. We had a great time doing each one of these, and the audiences seem to love it, and we're actually starting to see some good activity in terms of viewership and comments up on the website. We have a lot of speakers here today helping us out. Once you guys all come on up here, Jim and Christopher and David, and we'll just try to introduce you real quick here. And what I'm going to do is Stan, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Stan Schultes. I'm from Sarasota, and I run the Sarasota Dev Group down there. Do quite a bit of speaking locally, do the It's All About the Tools segment, do some authoring, and I'm really glad to be here today. Thanks for coming.
All right, thank you very much. All right, so we have Christopher Benaz. How are you doing, Christopher?
I'm doing well.
Just say a few words about yourself. And
I am a Microsoft MVP, Client App Dev from Tallahassee, Florida. Let's hear it from Tallahassee. Yeah, all right. And I generally work with technologies such as WPF and Silverlight and Microsoft's ASP.NET MVC. Very interested in UI and user experience, and thus my interest in Blend.
That's great. That's great. We got a nice surprise demo for you on that with Christopher. Let's give it up for Christopher. Next up is Mr. David Silverlight. And boy, we can have a lot of fun with your last name, can't we? I tell you, did they actually name the technology after you, David?
You have to read my blog.
Oh, okay. All right. So go ahead and introduce yourself, David.
My name is David Silverlight. I'm a Client Access MVP from Miami, Florida. Hey, let's hear it from Miami, Florida.
All right.
During the day, I am a developer. In my free time, if you should call it that. I speak at different conferences, local user groups. I run a local user group in South Florida, the South Florida Silverlight User Group.
Mm-hmm.
I run a few websites. You may know Community Credit.
Yep.
Our motto is, we give stupid prizes to smart people.
That sounds good.
And essentially, I'm online about 24/7.
All right, cool. Well, thank you very much, David. Good for David. We'll hear more from him later. And last but not least, of course, Mr. Jim Woolley. Give it up for Jim.
Liam. Hello, everybody. My name is Jim Woolley. I'm a Microsoft MVP as well in Visual Basic. And I also have been working on Link, Language Integrated Query, for the last 4 years or so, even to the extent of writing a book on it. I know that's a glutton for punishment, but I'm glad to come all the way down here from Atlanta to be with you and show you everything I have to show.
All right. Give it up for Jim. So we got some smart dudes on this show, let me tell you. These guys are really great, and looking forward to a really good session here today. So let's go ahead and get started. I'm going to go ahead and take a seat and start getting into some code and some demos. And first of all, I'd like to thank once again all of our volunteers here that have helped us out. This is an all-volunteer effort. And I think we owe a big round of applause to all the cameramen and the sound men and everybody's been volunteering to help us out. All right, so today's developer challenges, right? We're faced with challenges every day as a developer. And some of these challenges we're going to help you out with here today and trying to find the right tool, right? The right tool for the right job just makes such a big difference, especially in our line of work, but really, anytime, even if you're doing work on a car or something like that, you got to have the right tool to really get that job quickly done and do it well. And that's really what it's all about. So let's start in on some of these challenges. How can you quickly display and navigate a large photo up on a website? As you know, a lot of times you might have a high-res photo up on a website, and it will take forever, right, to download. But yet you're kind of in a dilemma. You want the user to be able to see all the details of that photo, yet, you know, you don't want them to suffer the download time and how long it takes to open that up. And also, you'd like to provide maybe some capabilities for accessing various parts of that photograph and drilling into it a little bit easier. All right, so we'll talk about that and what we can do to help you along those lines. This one I recently came across myself. All right, you want to build a website that supports ASP.NET, Deep Zoom, Composer Images, perhaps Ajax, and Silverlight videos, and you want it done quick. And so, what do we have to help you out to try to get you established and create a website real quick? To go out and do this. So we'll take a look at that as well today. Stan's going to be talking about this one here. Do you wish you could find that perfect piece of code that you know you've written before somewhere? Has anybody here ever lost a piece of code,
yeah,
right, that they would love to use again?
We'll
take a look at that.
I know it's in an app somewhere. I just can't find
That's
it.
That's exactly right. Where did I put that again? Let's see. When was I working on it? Okay, it was sort by date. So you get the idea. All right, then, we got Jim coming up here. He's going to do a killer demo on Link tools. Just out of curiosity, how many people here are using Link technology? Show of hands. That's a good number of you, about half of you. And those that aren't, I think at some point or another down the road, if you're working with data, you're probably going to end up working with Link. It's a real easy way of getting that data. And Jim's got some great tools to show you to help ease that and learn Link a little bit better for those that are brand new to it as well. Then we get into Christopher's demo that he's going to solve this pain point, right? You have the source art from your design group, but how do you convert that into WPF and Silverlight? This is like an age-old problem, right? Mm-hmm. We always have between developers and designers. They design something, and then there's a disconnect between the design world and the development world. And so what we're going to see here is a great new way of kind of blending that a little bit easier, no pun intended there, on the words, right? So I'll give you a little hint of what that product's going to be about, right? And finally, we're going to end up, David Silver is going to come up here, and it's funny because I've known David for quite a while, and he does a great job with the community, as all these guys do, and he showed me this user group site, you know, for he's running down in South Florida, and I go, man, you got to demo that. You just got to show us the code, like how you did that. So as it turned out, it's a really great architected piece of code. But the pain then, of course, is you'd like to have a solid code base and a starting point for getting your feet wet in a real-world Silverlight application. And wouldn't it be nice? We all love sample code, right? And we all even love better sample code that involves best practices. So this is a very, very good way to end our sessions here today. So let's go ahead and get started. Okay, so in this section here, we're going to start covering on building a app that allows you to display photos in a way that maybe you're not accustomed to, or maybe in a way that at least will save you some performance, right, when your users go to try to download those pictures. So let's get right into it and see what we're talking about. We're going to talk about Deep Zoom Composer. Just out of curiosity, how many folks here have played with Deep Zoom? Show of hands. How many have actually seen a demonstration of Deep Zoom? Show of hands. So about half of you. So for the other half, this is going to be a brand new topic for you, one I think you're really going to enjoy. And really what it's involved with is taking a collection of images and, high res. Kathy, you got my camera there. You want to go show it up? Just hold it up in the air. Kathy Malone, I forgot to thank as well. She's doing our photography work here today, so round of applause to Kathy. And so just hold it up high. That's a Digital Rebel camera. I bought that about, 6 years ago. It was one of the first single-lens reflex digital cameras out, and it's got 6 megapixels, which is kind of small nowadays. They're 10 and bigger. But the idea with that camera, okay, you can put it down, give your arm a rest, is, you know, you can blow up a photograph 20 by 30 and not lose any clarity of the resolution. Right. And when you've got a camera like that, it's ideal for this type of scenario that I'm about to unfold before your eyes here. So where can you get it? Up to the download site, just do a search on Deep Zoom Composer. And it also has the ability to put together a panoramic view if you want to do that, several pictures, and it automatically would detect the edges and the like things to go ahead and make that camera work. So once you publish your composition, the problems it solves here is you can use a standard broadband connection to quickly display and navigate your photos, really the bottom line here. And if you are really looking for a killer user experience on your website, this is it. And you know what? It's really easy to do. All right, and that's the best part I love about it. So let's go ahead and actually show you this now. So I'm going to bring up, first of all, the Hard Rock site. Now, the Hard Rock site is very, very cool. And what they did was they have a whole memorabilia section. Anybody here been to the Hard Rock? You showing hands, good number of you, right? One of my favorite things to do there is when I'm waiting for my food order to come out after order is to walk around and look at all the memorabilia in the place. I don't know about you, but I really enjoy doing that. So what they decided to do is put up a memorabilia site. Now, many people have probably seen this before that have worked with Zoom. This is one of the marquee demos. So here we got the Hard Rock, and if we scroll in a little bit here, you can start seeing some of the details, you know, but this one here, I tell you what, let me scroll out a little bit and see what this is part of here. Oh, look at that. I don't know. Anybody know what that is yet? Okay, we'll go back a little bit further. Oh, wait a minute. That looks like it's a stamp right on that. And if you come back out, you can actually start seeing, you know, the entire letter there that was published, as well as a lot of the other photographs and things of that nature. So, for example, this toboggan, if we go ahead and roll in on that one. You can see there the toboggan. You can see how it was like a little blurry at first, but then it crispened right up. And these are downloading lickety-split.
A lot like virtual quick. Earth, huh?
Yeah, so, you know, this was about the toboggan that was used in the film Help. And anybody read the comments over there about Bob Dylan there, what he did? Through this film, they were pretty much wasted, you know, through the whole filming of the Help movie. So, but you can go ahead there and zoom in right in and see the granular details, you know, of that toboggan. There's another site that Kevin Wolf put together. Kevin in here? No, he didn't make it in. I did a presentation in a user group the other night, and he was talking to me a little bit later, and he actually put together a memorial site, and he said I could show it on the show, and I guess he passed away about a year ago, but this is something he did with his collection of photos, and he put a nice, you know, composition together of all the photos in a deep zoom kind of format. So it's doable, it's fairly straightforward, so let's get to it and show you how this actually works. So what I'm going to do here is bring up my Deep Zoom composer, and I've already, we're going to go ahead and create a new project here, and we're going to call this one Baseball. I got some neat baseball pictures here I'm going to share with you, and so let's go ahead and add in our image, and the image I'm going to go ahead and add in is this image of bats. This bat happens to be a collection of the 500 home run hitters, and it's on display over in Tampa at Tropicana Field in the Ted Williams Hitters Hall of Fame. And so here, once again, we've got our picture. You can see all the autographs there. So that's step one, import your images. Step two is to go ahead and compose it. And we're just going to drag and drop this particular image up to fit the up to the screen. And there are many options here that you can play with here. If you want to go ahead and just make a slideshow as part of your Deep Zoom composition, you can do that. You can add in a menu structure to go ahead and say, okay, which pictures do I want to show here? You've got the ability to insert internal links and also impressions, right? If you want to see how many hits you're getting, you got some statistics that can be captured there as well. The other thing you can do, now you notice down here I've got a working image area, and if I had a snapshot of just Don Mattingly's autograph, but really close up, I can overlay it and put like a tile on top of that, and it'll automatically match it up. So when you get to that point, now it'll be zooming in on that really close-up view instead of the far away view, and that's how the Hard Rock actually did there. They took lots of pictures of the memorabilia so that when you do zoom in, you're getting in on the zoomed-in picture. So there's a lot of capabilities there as well, and this is where you would put together photos side by side if you wanted to create a panoramic view. But I'm just going to keep it very simple here today. I'm going to go ahead then and go to the last step, which is export. There's a tab here for Deep Zoom Pics. It allows you to use Live ID and post it up to the web. Or you can do it custom locally, and we're going to do that here. So I've got a choice here of doing it in output type of all images. I can do an output type of Deep Zoom and an output type of C-Dragon Ajax. So they're all supported. If I do pick Ajax, you notice what happened down below here. The only choice available now is export as a composition, in other words, a single image. Whereas Silverlight Deep Zoom, you have a couple of different options there as well. So we're going to keep the Silverlight Zoom. We're going to go 100%. And let's go ahead and do a preview. And now what we'll see now is that we come up with our zooming capabilities on this photograph. It's creating all those pictures. It's going to bring up my little localhost web server. And then I can go ahead and click on these. And you can see it now coming in really pretty close to crystal clear. Now this was, you know, me kind of rushing through the exhibit. shooting my camera through a glass, you know, kind of like moving almost on the way. And really, this is not bad, right? If you take a look at the clarity that you're getting. So that is the Deep Zoom Composer. What do you think of that? Pretty nice? All right, so we're going to come back to this in a little bit. Actually, what I'm going to do here is go back into Deep Zoom. The last step would be to go ahead and hit the export button, and they'll write that file out to your hard drive, which I've already done, and I'll go ahead and consume that in a little bit in the next demo. So that's pretty good, huh, Stan?
That's awesome.
Good stuff? All right.
Yeah, I was going through the menu system of that application. It's very, you know, really very simple, and you know, not a whole lot to learning how to use it.
Okay, so our next challenge here for the next tool tip in this episode 5 of It's All About the Tools is one that is kind of close to my heart. I live in this condominium association in Newport Richey, Florida. And the guy that actually did the site is moving out. He moved out of the condominium complex, so they're looking for someone to volunteer to take the site over. And so I don't want to spend a whole lot of time doing this, and I really want to put this up nice and quick, and I want something to look fairly nice, right, as well as support a lot of these new technologies that I talk about day in and day out, right? So I want to be able to do something like that Deep Zoom Composer image. I want to be able to use something like embedding a Silverlight video, for example, on the page. So let's see what we have on tap for that. Expression Web 3 is what this session's about here. And we can go out to the Expression Try It site, and we can see that there is a community site up there as well. A lot of good samples and tutorials, as well as you can download trial versions of this. So again, the problem sites it solves is being able to use all these technologies, doing it in a quick manner, and also being able to easily publish these as well. So what I plan on doing is put together like a website committee, you know, in the condo complex, and have other folks involved publish to various parts of the site, right? So this, what I'm about to show you, helps do that. There's a brand new thing too that helps speed up development, and when you want to be able to compare what it looks like on browser A, browser B, browser C, because let's face it, when you're doing websites, you want to make sure it looks good on all the different potential browsers that are out there. And there are some things that are in here, namely Snapshot and Super Preview, that allow you to do that. One other thing I do want to mention now, in terms of the packaging, Expression Web 3 comes with Expression Encoder 3 and Expression Design. So when you buy Expression Web 3, you get all three products now, which is just tremendous. And we'll see some of the integration points as well as part of that going forward here. So let me go out and first show you the Gulf Harbor's website, the current one. And this is it. This is what I started working with. And the question was, you know, you want to take this over or you want to do it from scratch?
Now, were they begging you to change that?
Well, you know, I don't know. I think it leaves a little bit more fluorescent green and a few more things blinking, don't you? But, you know, he's got a good heart, and he meant well. And,
you
know,
a
lot of folks, they
go
this route, right? When you're developing stuff, you might just do something to learn it, right? And that's step one, of course. And then step two is making it look aesthetically pleasing and put a little bit of design work maybe into it. And so that's what we're starting with. But I wanted to point out things like, you know, the happening photos, Gulf Harbor history, Comet newsletter photos. And basically what I did was I created a nice tab for each one of those, right, to kind of map that functionality in. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I wanted to show you the Try It site as well for Expression. So there you can see the Expression Web 3. You got features, system requirements. You can go ahead and click on that. You can read about, you know, the top new features. You got a great design surface, great CSS support. You got some really nice visual diagnostics, including a new feature called Super Preview. You can easily add media now, which is great. You know, Flash or Silverlight or Deep Zoom, really just with a few clicks, and you're going to really love that piece as well. Okay, so that's our site, and so let's get out of here and bring it up. And so here's my project I started. Now, the way I created this, let me just show it to you first. I'm going to bring it up in my browser here, and so I applied a nice skin. And there's our home page. I got a page set for the news, a photo gallery page, video page, and so forth. There's the about, right? I've got that in there. I've got some contact information stated. But what's nice here is this pool. I love that. That's a pool right across from my condo. I love that thing. It's just great. It's always the right temperature exactly. They do a great day maintaining it. And so this is my site. So how did I create this? Well, I went into site and then the new site. And it comes with many different templates. And the one I picked was this, I think, Organization 4, kind of the purple background. I went in and I tweaked it a little bit. I added a few more tabs. And what this does is brings up, by the way, a dynamic web template, which you see here. And what that does is that creates this this look and feel on every page in the site. So as I'm clicking through there, you'll see these tab bars on the left and the header on the top on each one of these. All I did here to expand this, I added a few more tabs in here. One I added in for the videos, right? So I just did a copy and paste technology there. And then I put another one in here for nightlife, because I want to do some nightlife stuff on the site. What's in and around the different clubs, who's playing where and when. So I got that. Also supported, of course, our master pages for ASP.NET. So if you want to do the same type of thing with ASP.NET master pages, you can do that. I have some links, too, on the slide coming up when I get done with this demo for additional templates. You can download. There's a ton of them up there on the internet, okay? So you can really find some nice ones to give you a nice starting point. And this was really quick, man. I had this thing set up, ready to go, you know, within an hour, I would say, you know, before it was all said and done. I did modify some of the styles in here, the style sheets as well. I played around with some of these widths on some of the borders, make it a little bit wider, a little tuning like that. So those are some of the things I did there. So let's go ahead and take a look at what's new. So the very first thing that hit me when I installed this was something called Super Preview. Now, if you're like me, that's like one of the first things you gotta check out, right? Super Preview, what a name. I mean, this has gotta be good, right? So I go ahead and bring up Super Preview, and let's go ahead and take a look at what we got here. All right, so first of all, it brings up all these different types of browsers, and how does it get these on here? Well, any browser you got installed in your machine will go ahead and automatically come up. I did not have Firefox installed on my machine, so but I wanted to see, you know, for the demo here if it would run, and also, you know, when I go to publish this, I want to make sure it renders okay in the different browsers as well. So you can see that picked up. So my baseline, I'm going to go ahead and pick is IE8 on this side, and over here we'll go ahead and put Firefox to compare it to, and let's go ahead and bring these up. So now what it's going to do is load those that default page that I had in my site, and bring up what it looks like on each side of the page. Okay, so there we are. So now what happens, if I go and click, for example, on calendar over here, and I go and bring this up a little bit, in fact, to click on the DOM, what we'll see here is the exact line of code where this is located, right, in my page. So this is really nice for troubleshooting, right? If you just click on an area of the page, it'll bring you right to that section of the HTML. So you know where it is when you have to tweak and tune different things.
Well, that's a lot like the IE Developer Toolbar, then.
It does, yeah. I think maybe we use some of that same code from the IE Developer Toolbar, which we covered before in some of our sessions. A nice thing to do is a lights out approach, too, so you can highlight, you know, what area of the thing you're looking at. If you're doing a walkthrough of the site for somebody, you can say, mm-hmm. Focus here on this area. The other thing you got is the ability to add or take away a ruler. You also got the ability to do, toggle some thumbnail visibility. And the one I really like is this one here. Is a overlay layout. So when I click this, it's going to overlay those two over the top of each other. And if there are any differences between these pages, you would see it because it's like a opaque canvas overlaying one over the other. So some good stuff there, huh? Pretty nice. Yeah. All right. The next thing I want to show you beyond Super Preview then is. Something we had covered in our first tooltip here today was inserting some media into your application. So we did that great baseball bat example, right? So let's go out to my photo page, and I'm going to go ahead and insert that photo. And so I'll go to my photo gallery into my page here, and I'm going to go ahead and let's go. You got design, split, code view, what you like to do. So I'm going to go ahead and insert that photo from the Deep Zoom Composer. And I'm going to go ahead and do it under Insert, and now Media. Now look at this. You got Flash Movie, Silverlight, Silverlight Videos. You've got Deep Zoom and Windows Media Player to embed very easily. Let's go ahead, and we're doing a photo gallery, so we're going to go ahead and put a Deep Zoom image in here. I'm going to go out to my generated image file that I created when I exported the Deep Zoom. And here you get a choice here. And what's really nice, I love this auto detect. That would automatically detect the client if they have Silverlight installed on their machine or not. And if they don't, it'll download the Ajax version. All right, so really pretty slick. And it does all the JavaScript for you automatically on that to do that detection. So let's go ahead and make this 480, say it by 360 for our image here. And let's go ahead, and you got the ability to control how fast you zoom in and out. And now what's going to happen, it's going to go ahead and import that. It's going to, you saw it add the JavaScript folder up there in my project. And it's going to go ahead and bring this up. And what we'll see very shortly is the embedded file. I'm going to go ahead and overlay any of the files that I have up there. So now if I go ahead and view this guy in our browser, what you'll see now is that deep zoom vivid. So you see here at the script that's running, so it's giving you a little warning there. So if I go ahead and click on this, there we go. We can zoom right in there on Don Mattingly's baseball bat. There's another one here that's pretty neat. What is this one right down here, I think? This is over here with, what was that?
It's Eno Slaughter.
Eno Slaughter, that's right. And you can look here, this one here is the 1946 World Series game 7, 8th inning, and it was number 284 of 500. So some really great stuff. And how easy was that, huh?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I'm loving this, you know. So when I go now and take my pictures around the pool and around the condo, and we can zoom in on those, right? So it's really good. Better be warn all my neighbors, right, over there? Okay. Another thing we'll take a look at here is the snapshot, all right? So this part here we're going to show doing a new feature under panels is a full item called snapshot. And what's nice about this is you get instant feedback what your page actually looks like inside of the integrated inside of the IDE here. So what happens here is bring up this real estate, it'll go ahead and automatically bring up that particular page right in your environment. So you can dock this anywhere you want, it's always there, you double click, you get it. So if you just want to go real quick, every page in your site, boom, 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 you got a real easy way of doing that nice and quick. And also, right from here, you can say, which one do I want to view it in? And also, over from here, what size I want to view it in. How about that, all right? So there are some other enhancements, of course, in Expression Web 3, including some of the enhancements where you publish content to a website. Who here, by curiosity, has ever used Expression Web, show of hands, or front page, right? So a good number of you have done that. And one painful thing for me, I know, was always publishing it because it was like one file at a time. And man, it was very painfully slow. Now we batch them up, send a lot of files all at once, so it happens a lot quicker. And you can also go over a secure FTP connection as well now for publishing. So last demo I'm going to end this with, I'm going to go out to my video page. So guess what kind of video I'm going to go ahead and add here, folks? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and insert a Silverlight video. So let's go ahead and do that. Insert, same media pull down. And you're going to love this. This is just so wicked cool, as they say up in New England.
Wicked cool.
And I'm going to go out to my movie folder here, video folder. I'm just going to go bring in this butterfly video. And what you're going to see come up now is the encoder, right? So this is some integration built right in with Expression Web 3 and how it works with the encoder. The drop-down list you see here on top are all the different encoding options that you can choose from. So if you want to encode for H.264, for example, maybe for a Zoom player or an iPod or something like that, you can go ahead and choose one of those. And you got Facebook, HD, you've got high-speed broadband, and also you got all the VC1 encoding ones. So I'm going to go ahead and do a screen encoding, which is a 1024 by 768 encoding. And then I'm going to go ahead and take a look at the different templates you have to put on the page. We'll just go ahead and pick the new Silverlight 3 default player. And we'll go ahead and put in our coordinates here, 640. And I'm going to lock the aspect ratio here as well. So then I'm going to also say automatically start the video is queued. I'm not going to automatically start it, but I am going to queue it when the page is loaded. And then you can also display a time code as well over there on the page. So we'll go ahead and encode it. You got different stretch modes available to you as well. Now, while it's encoding, there's a couple points I want to make note of here. The rest of the ID is kind of locked while this encoding is going on. So if you have a very large video file, I would recommend just going out to encoder 3, which you also get with this, and encode it in that product. And then you can go back and you're free to do development work inside of Expression Web 3. The other thing I want to point out here is the fact that Once you have this website established, you can actually, you know, edit this with Visual Studio. So an Expression Web 3 website is the same as a Visual Studio website. So if you wanted to, for example, go into this container, put a link out to maybe a real estate page and bring stuff in, you can go ahead and do that. And, you know, put a little code behind or do some debugging or whatever, and you can flip-flop back and forth between the two. All right, so our demo here is complete, so let's go ahead and view this page. And what we'll see now is our butterfly video embedded in a Silverlight player in a matter of a few clicks.
Wonderful.
I'm loving this. You know, I showed my boss this the other day, and he was like flipping out because he just got done building like a kind of a community website too, and you can't wait till you start using this as well.
Good
what do you
tools.
Think, Stan, huh? Pretty
These
nice.
Are good tools.
That's
really
great.
Nice.
Okay, we have a question in the back.
Yes. When you compose that video, is it possible to turn off the toolbar on the bottom? Examples that you wanted to have an animated object moving that's a video playing around your text. Would you be able to do that without the toolbar?
So, great question, and what you can do here is you notice if we run this and start playing this, if I double-click on this, it'll bring up, first of all, without the menu bar on the bottom. Secondly, there are different skins that you can choose from to go ahead and accommodate that look that you want if you just want a player with nothing on it, no bar on the bottom.
And you can design your own skin, too, so if you don't like the way that it looks by default, you can create your own. It's just a XAML file.
So one more slide then to end this this piece up, and this was, I actually had a bit of a discussion here with MVP Christian Leeds. He's up in Pennsylvania. Again, are there more website templates you can download? Was a question I had asked him, and yes, you can. And these are some of the sites where you can go ahead and get them at, up at Expression Web Step by Step, templatemonster.com and oswd.org. And he's also got some tips and tricks turning any HTML page into a dynamic web template. And then also I asked if there was a photo gallery plugin, and he says there is not as such, but he has taken Expression Media to make a nice Silverlight gallery for use, and you can take a look at that up at the link that follows. And there's some of his contact info, so I want to thank him very much for helping us out there. So that's our demo on Expression Web 3. All right, so the next tool step we're going to cover here today is about the challenge where we want to find that perfect piece of code that you once spent hours, you know, and days writing, and you know you've got a new app and you need that same piece of code again. It happens a lot to us in the developer world, huh, Stan? And so we're going to talk about that. And a little bit more information about Stan here. He's an expert in VB, expert in VB.net, and he's been the co-host for all the episodes of It's All About the Tools. He's joined me and done many webcasts as well. He's always presenting for the community and does a great job with the Sarasota Dev Group down in Sarasota as well, and many publications to your credit, as well as a new book and some of the chapters you wrote on the Professional.net Nuke, being a co-author there. So a big round of applause for Mr. Stan Schulte. And Stan, we'll go ahead and let you take it away here.
Thank you very much. So we're going to talk about the snippet editor for Visual Studio. You know, typically I think, you know, Russ said you spend hours writing this piece of code, but actually these are more for small pieces of code that are very reusable, you know, that you might often put into a component of some sort, but in some cases you'd rather just have a code snippet you can insert. So it's an application, it's a desktop application that manages code snippets in any .NET language. So it originally started out as a VB code snippet editor, but actually it handles C# now and Java and HTML as well. But it lets you maintain your own template libraries of code that you can just plug in. So you get it from snippeteditor.codeplex.com. It, as I said, it's a desktop app that was written by VB MVP Bill McCarthy, who's down in Australia. So you can search, create, and edit, do syntax highlighting, drag and drop snippet organization inside the tool. It inserts namespace definitions and references required by the snippets if you want it to. And you can export and share your snippets with other developers as well through an export mechanism. So it works in all versions of Visual Studio from 2005 through 2010, which hasn't released yet, but Bill has updated it for 2010. It does require .NET 3.5, and here's a download link for C# snippets. There aren't nearly as many in the, that come with Visual Studio and C#, so you can actually download them from the site that's listed here. Okay, so let's go and take a look at what's up with code snippets in Visual Studio. We're going to start in Visual Studio itself, and the snippets feature, I think, is very underutilized by many .NET developers, and it might be because it's somewhat limited in its extensibility, but the Code Snippet Manager makes it a lot easier to deal with these. In Visual Studio, this is 2008, you'll see that there is a Code Snippets Manager under the Tools menu. However, this doesn't let you add snippets or edit them. All it does is, I mean, it lets you add snippets, but it doesn't let you create new ones or edit the ones that are there. You can create new folders and you can import snippets from other people in here, but there's no way to actually manage the snippets themselves. So this is where the external tool comes from. So to give you an idea, this is a very simple application I'm just going to use to demonstrate how snippets work. But you can type the shortcut key, and tab will actually expand a piece of code. So in this case, I put a property definition into the code, and what you do here then is you start typing. If I tab around, you can see that it actually goes around to each of these tags that are in the code. So I can type in underscore index as integer, and the property might be called index, and it substitutes that value into each of the places where it's supposed to go. So in that case, I had to actually substitute three things. Well, we can do a little bit better than that by making a simple change to this snippet out in the snippet editor. So let's go and take a look at the editor itself and see what it takes to do that. So here's the, it does say, like I said, VB Code Snippet Editor, although the message in a bottle here theme. But you can see at the top left corner, the only version of Visual Studio I have installed in this machine is 2008. But what it will do is automatically detect the version that you've got and support that code. So if you've got 2010 installed, it'll show up here in this list.
Stan, let me get this right. So what you're about to show then is creating your own snippet and then importing that into Visual Studio so you have that readily available to you as well as the ones that already come with it.
That's correct. Or you can edit the ones that are already there if you want to make a change. And that's what I'm going to do first.
Okay.
So there's a search box here. I can actually drill down. If you take a look, there's actually quite a few categories of snippets that are available, especially in VB. In C#, somewhat more limited, but you can download from that link that I put in the slides. So we're going to hop out here to the define a property. And if I double-click on that, it'll bring it up in the right-hand pane over here. So what we can see in the right-hand pane at the very top is a set of properties about this snippet. In the center, then, is the code itself with some highlighting on it for the tags that are replaceable. In the bottom are some more attributes, and then at the very bottom are the references and import section. Okay, so this is that snippet that define a property that I used, and you can see that the shortcut is property. And if you cycle through these, you can see that it'll highlight the individual tags that are in the code. Now, I'm going to go to this one that's called private variable right here, and you'll see that when I delete that, it'll pick up this value that's in defaults to down here. So I'm going to actually click the X and delete that, and we're going to make a slight change here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick up the property name tag that's in here, just copy that, and I'm going to replace the code that's here with an underscore, which is a piece of text, and then that actual property name tag. And just grab that whole thing then and replace it in the other two places that it needs to go here. Okay, and then I can update, since I've modified this, I'll put my name in the author. And then when I click save, it'll save it back out to the disk. Now, one note here is if you're running Vista or Win 7, you have to run this as administrator if you want to overwrite the snippets that come with Visual Studio, because that's a protected directory. So I already ran this as administrator, so it let me do it. Otherwise, it'll give you an error here. Okay, so now if I go back out to the code, and if I type prop again, tab, we can see that now all I have to do is type in two values instead of three. So so I've actually modified that snippet that's there and just made it a little bit better so I don't have to put three substitutions in. All right, so that's modifying an existing snippet that comes with Visual Studio. So what we want to do now is maybe show how we can add our own snippets, okay, our own code into this thing.
So I used to do this before myself, Stan, and I used to work in XML and copy and paste the XML snippets.
Oh, yeah.
That's the actual name and format of these.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, you get a big headache doing this. A lot of heads nodding out there. You know, you've been there, right?
Yeah.
So this, I think, is a good time saver.
In fact, if you look down here at the very bottom line, you'll see that that particular snippet that I've got up, there's a link for it down here, and if I click on that link, it'll open right to the directory where that snippet is, and you can see it's a .snippet file, and if I just edit that thing, you can see that it's an XML file, and
straightforward.
You can go in here and edit the XML directly,
but
you don't want to have to mess with that. You want to use a tool like this to make sure that you get that XML syntax right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's kind of what it's all about. So back to the editor now, and you can see that I've already if I right click on Visual Basic, you can add a path, and I've already done that down here for type conversions. All right, so I've got this piece of code called bytes to string, and if I double click on it here, you'll see that it's a very simple piece of code, and I've only got one substitution right now. It's for the name of the parameter that comes in. You could do it on the name of the function itself, but I've already got BTS, which is byte to string, as the shortcut, so it probably doesn't make sense really to substitute that, although you can make anything you want in here a tag that's substitutable. Now, I do want to make one quick change to this. You can see that I've got the namespace defined for that ASCII encoding here. I'm going to actually take it out of there, and I'm going to stick it down below. Before I do that, let me just demonstrate how this works in Visual Studio. So if I just type BTS, you know, for my bytes to string, it'll pop in, and I can, like, you know, make this, you know, input array or whatever I want to call that value. Okay, and you can see that the namespace is embedded here, you know, in the call to ASCII encoding. All right, so let's go and modify that slightly in the snippet editor and make a save on that. So I've already removed that namespace definition. I'm going to scroll down here to the bottom, and I'm going to add it to the imports area and paste it here. Okay. Now if I go back up and save this and go back to Visual Studio and try that again, we'll see when I type BTS, now it actually adds the imports as well up here at the top of the code. All right, so I didn't have to. You know, you can then tell it to do that, or you can have it add a reference to your project as well in Visual Basic. So that's a very handy tool. So now, functionality inside the tool. So if I want to actually add my own, a brand new snippet of my own, what I can do then is come back over here to the type conversions, add new snippet, and I'm going to name this one bytes from string. And I'm going to hop out to where I've got my code stored, just copy it here, hop back in, and need to double-click on that, paste my code in, and it's called bytes from string, and I can put my description in here, byte array to a string. Now, this is really handy, like, for cryptography and things like that, where you're using byte arrays have to go in and out of the crypto tools, but you're always going to display, you know, the information you want to encrypt as a string. So, you know, this is just a handy tool to go back and forth. So put my name in here. And my shortcut is going to be BFS, bytes from string now. And then all I have to do is double-click on the value that I want to turn into a tag and click the plus sign here, and it turns it into a tag everywhere that it's found inside that code snippet, so I don't have to go and find every instance of it. And again, I'm going to take that namespace definition that's here away from the code, since I stored that in the snippet that I had on my disk. And when I get all the way done, then when I save it, I can go out and run this in Visual Studio. So now when I get back into Visual Studio, I just have to type BFS, and now my new snippet that I just added is now available to me inside the dev environment.
Sweet, huh?
What do you guys think about that? So I think this is a tool that we can all use. You know, it's like I said, it tends to be fairly underutilized out in the dev world, but this is something that everybody can put in their toolbox and get some benefit from.
And once again, how much is this?
It's free.
And where do you get it from?
You get it from CodePlex.
There you go.
Code
snippets. Great source. Maybe we'll do a little tool tip episode just on Coplex, you know, coming up sometime and see what's in that wealth of resources. So that's great. Give it up for Mr. Stan Schulte. Okay, so our next tool tip here is about Link and using this great technology to you know, access data, and there was a lot more to it than that. I'm going to let the pro talk about it here. Jim is an excellent source on doing Link. You can see him doing many talks at, boy, you got a lot of conferences lined up, right, coming up?
Oh, a bunch of them.
A couple of code camps. And
all throughout the Southeast region, particularly right now.
Yep. That's great. And he's got a great spin on his company name, W1C. I love that. That's kind of a spin on W3C.
Yep.
And Twitter, Link King. He's a part of the INETA Speaker Bureau, which is great. And I'm just really happy to have you here. He's done a lot of presentations at VS Live, DevLink, CodeStock. What I love that name of that event. And, of course, I always hook up with Jim at the code camps throughout the Southeast U.S. So why don't we go ahead and give a round of applause for Jim. Thanks for coming out here today.
Yep.
And you got some tools, huh, to show us around Link.
Got a bunch of them there.
Yeah. Okay, so what's your first demo here on?
Okay, the first demo is on things that you probably already have access to. Actually, all of the products that I'm going to be showing you are all free tools. Okay, so there's no extra charge that you're going to have to do. A lot of them just a simple download. First one is a set of downloads you may already have. If you go inside of Visual Studio, you click on Help, there's a button for samples. You can go on that samples, you can download samples. The samples that you may have seen are, there's 101 samples. Well, actually, a lot more than that. There's 101 linked to object samples, 101 linked to SQL samples, and 202 linked to XML samples.
202.
101 for regular XML, and another 101 proving some of the W3C specifications. Okay, they have them both in VB and in C#. Now, the tools that I'm specifying here is actually the C# tools, because there's a couple of extra little tools that they threw in just for good measure that are coded in C#, but you can run them either in VB or C#. Okay, and so you already have them. The ones that you've probably already taken a look at may have been the sample queries if you've downloaded this already. And this is the file structure that you have of the directory itself. But the additional ones we're going to be taking a look at are kind of hidden here. One, you may have heard about it, is the query visualizer. That allows you to see what your database is doing from your link query in a link to SQL query. The other one is the expression tree visualizer. And with the expression tree visualizer, you're able to see how all of the query is broken apart and how you can fit it back together again. And then there's one little sample here, which is, VB really doesn't need it. It's a paste XML as link. And I'll show you why VB doesn't need it and why some C# people probably would be interested in that one. So let's jump right into these. Oh, and how do you use these? Basically, with all three of these, you take the directory and you compile it. And there's a readme file which will tell you what you need to do with that. Basically, you just copy the file over into your My Documents Visual Studio 2008, either add-ins or visualizers. If it's a visualizer, put it in the visualizers. If it's an add-in, you put it in the add-ins. Just by doing that, you're automatically going to get the benefit of using these tools.
Pretty easy.
Pretty easy. It's even easier than Xcopy deployment.
Just curiosity, how many people are using Link here? Show of hands. Good
All
number
right.
of you. That's great. So
this
you're going to love these tools.
Yeah, you're going to really find these helpful, I think. Okay, so right now I've already created sort of the prototypical Link query. It's querying from customers. This is a Northwind database. But remember, Link's not only about working with databases. It just so happens to have a couple providers that can work against databases, Link to SQL and the Entity Framework. But it works against objects, XML, flat files, CSV. I even got a sneak one here to show you about Twitter. So it might be fun. So we have a query, and we might want to know, when doing it to the database, exactly what's happening to the database. So let's go ahead and just run this query real quick. And when we run it, I don't really care what the results are, but what I'm really interested in, since I installed that visualizer, you now see a magnifying glass. And when I click on this magnifying glass in the visualizer, it's going to bring me up the visualizer tool. And in this visualizer tool at the top, it's going to show me how did my link query translate over into extension methods and lambda expressions. So this is what the compiler is really seeing. And then, what kind of SQL got generated that's going to be sent to the database. Now, if you look at this carefully, and or show this to a DBA, they may say, but it looks like you're doing SQL injection right there, because you're putting an actual string literal in. Well, what this is showing you isn't really what's getting sent to the database. If you want to see what really gets sent to the database, you click this button that says original query, and that's going to change that out to show you a parameter.
Okay.
Okay. The reason why they're putting this in line is so that you can go in here and change the values. And then after you change the values, you can then execute it and see right in the little grid. You don't have to build out any additional sources or anything like that. You can see right in the grid what the results of that query are going to be. So is that kind of helpful for you? Okay. Everybody's going to install that tomorrow, right? Yep.
How about tonight? A round of applause there.
Now, that's helpful if you really want to see what's going on in the database. But what if you really want to know what's going on under the covers of this link query? Now, that's where the expression tree visualizer comes into play. Link in and of itself is just a variable that retains not the data from the query, but how the query itself is structured. And we can pass that query around as variables, essentially, and it's part of an expression tree. And so another thing we can do is we can access the expression property of the query. And since I installed the expression tree visualizer, I can now take a look at the whole tree that makes up that expression. Now, there's a lot of information here. Remember, that query wasn't that complex, right? But if we scroll through this, you see there's a heck of a lot of stuff. Okay. So what is this really sort of getting at? Well, parts of it, we can see that we have a where method. And that where method is going to have a binary expression, which is doing a compare on a customer, which we're going to name C, and its city property, and we're going to compare that against a constant string that's called the value of London. Okay. So there's a lot of helpful information here. It's taken the entire query and broken it apart into all of its component pieces. And the advantage is that you'll be able to take those component pieces, tear them apart, piece them back together into some other provider like T-SQL or to a REST call or whatever your provider is going to be. Most people aren't going to be doing this, but if you need to write your own dynamic queries, you're going to often need to be able to create some of these kinds of things. So it's helpful to write the query, write the change to the query, see the change that's happened in the expression tree, and then move on from there. And that's a helpful way of learning what's really going on under the covers of Link. Okay? Most people probably aren't going to go out and run and install that one tomorrow. But it does help when you need it.
Well, also, it's a great learning tool.
Right? Oh, yes,
really
it is.
Seeing exactly what's going on. So those are just getting new into Link. Mm-hmm. You want to really see what's going on under the covers.
Maybe seeing too much.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the next one is the Link to XML, the paste as XML. And one of the great things, if you aren't familiar with VB9, what they added was the ability to add XML directly inside of your code. So I can just type XML, and what I'm trying to create looks exactly like what I'm going to create. Now, that's only in VB. C#, you have to do a little bit more manipulations. It still looks better than it did when you were using the XML DOM, but it's not quite as pretty. One of the things that they added with those sample tools is the ability to copy this an XML sample, go into your C# code, put your cursor down, say edit, paste XML as X element, and you're going to see that automatically when you install that as an add-in. When I click that, it's going to bang, include all the code that I would have needed to write to have created that XML. If you wanted to change a value, you can just change and say, no, I want that value to be 3, and there you are, away you can go. Okay, is that helpful? Yeah? Okay. First, if you want to make it easier, just write it in VB. Okay, so those are a couple of tools that you get inside of Visual Studio. The next tool I'm going to show you is not a product that's inside of Visual Studio, but it's, again, a free product. And this is really one of the most helpful ones that I've found to be able to learn Link. Some people say if you take this product and use that for a week instead of Enterprise Manager, you'll find how hard it is to go back to SQL Server Enterprise Manager or Management Studio. Okay. So what we have here is a product called LinkPad. And let's just show a brief information about what LinkPad is here. It's a free standalone tool. All you need is Xcopy deployment. You don't need to do any installment or anything like that. You can get it at linkpad.net. And it's a great way of easily prototyping both link queries and any other VB or C# code that you want to do. So if you wanted to create some quick code, you didn't want to have to compile it all, create all of the prototypes and architectural pieces, then you're going to be able to do that and just quickly get something up and running to take a look at some code here. So let's see what we need to be able to do to actually run it here. I have a sample query. So from C and customers, where the city equals London, order by the company name. Let's say instead of order by the company name, let's say we want to order by the C.orders.count. So fine.
IntelliSense. Huh?
It has IntelliSense if you there is a pay charge for the IntelliSense.
Okay.
And that's only for the C# version.
All right.
Okay. So I do have that, and it's able to access because I say that I have pointed already to the Northwind database, and we say we're pointing over to Northwind, and so it already knows where customers and those kinds of things are. So when I run this, it's going to go out, hit the database, and bring me back my results. And if you notice, it brought the results back, not ordered as I had it previously ordered by company name, but now it's ordering by the account. It also shows you how long it took to run. If you're wanting to see, okay, how does this query translate over to the Lambda expression, so you can see the Lambda expression version of it. So if you wanted to learn that version, it's real quick and easy to do. If you want to see what the SQL was that got created, you can see the SQL really easy as well.
Wow.
If you're a glutton for punishment, you can take a look at what the IL is going to be. Most people aren't probably going to do
favorite.
That one,
That's
but it is, it is helpful. Yeah. Now, one of the great things that it comes with, not only being able to use this out of the box, is it came with a whole bunch of samples. So if I click down here on the samples, we can see that we have samples that came out of the box in the first top three, LinkPad, C-Sharp in a Nutshell, and VB9. This was written by the author of C-Sharp in a Nutshell by O'Reilly Press. And so he included his samples. But he also included a way for other authors to contribute. So I was one of the authors of Link in Action, and we contributed all of the samples of our book into LinkPad as well. So all you do is you go to this link, download the complete samples. Once you do that, then you're able to open up our samples. So we're going to go to a sample from chapter 6.
I was going to say, you should write a book on this.
Yeah, I did. And so here's a little more complex one. The first one, we just did a sample query. We didn't write any additional code. But it allows you to do not only sample just single queries, but also complete statements or even programs. So if you want to add your own custom classes, you can do that. Here's an example where I'm accessing our subjects and our books and trying to find out which books are priced under $30 and then show what the subject name was, the book title, and the book price. So if I run this one, it opens the database, and bang, we have a couple of books that are under $35. Unfortunately, Link in Action, the retail price isn't less than $30, but if you get it off of Amazon, I believe it might be there. I have to throw that plug in there. So one more sample that I want to show you here is a quick sample that's based off of a Twitter implementation. As I said, Link is not only working about databases. It just so happens to have some providers that work with databases. But there are a bunch of other providers that have come out since. We did in our book Link to Amazon. Another book is Link to Twitter. And so on the Link to Twitter, here's the quick sample of what Link to Twitter does. We just set up our authentication, sign on to Twitter itself. And then this sample, what it's doing is it's checking to see who are the friends of me. I'm the Link kink because I think Link is so sexy. And who are the friends of Joe Mayo, who's the person who wrote Link to Twitter. And so I can then get those sets of data off of Twitter, and then using a link to objects query, I can get the intersection between the two of those and find out which friends we have in common. So now if I run this sample, it takes a little bit of time accessing the Twitter APIs sometimes, particularly the first time up around.
I noticed you unselected that. Does that work the same as Enterprise Manager? Whatever you select, it will go ahead and run
yeah.
just that part.
Yeah, I've run into that problem sometimes okay. where I misselect something that says I have an error when I don't really have an error. But So we see right here, I have the two of us, we have seven friends in common. So it's kind of a real quick way of getting more detailed information of all the things. And so if you're interested in finding out more about Link to Twitter, here's the contact information about it. So you can go to linktotwitter.com, codeplex.com, another Codeplex site. And this not only is able to productive provider for you to see another data source, but it also has all the source code so that you can try to figure out, if I'm trying to build a provider myself, what kinds of things do I need to do in order to build that provider? And it's a fairly decent implementation. That's why I brought it up here.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah, thanks. That's awesome.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jim, for joining us today. It was a pleasure having you on the show. And, man, I'm telling you, I think I got to get your book. That's what I got to do, start reading up on Link. So great stuff there. Much appreciated. Once again, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. For this session here, I'm going to put the hard hat on because we got some serious tools, right, in this section here. We're going to be talking about Expression Blend 3.
That's correct.
And this is actually the third part we've done on Expression Blend 3 in the Tool Shed episodes. And the first one, we did the sketch flow enhancements, right, with the Expression Blend 3. Right, Bill Reese did a section on behaviors. And I think this is probably one of the top three areas as well in terms of enhancements with Expression Encoder 3.
It's certainly big. It's certainly a significant enhancement.
So that's what we're going to talk about specifically is, taking artwork from your design group and then using that programmatically in your code, right, and be able to convert perhaps layers in these drawings to XAML objects and so forth. And a little bit more about Christopher Banaj before I turn it over to him. He is a client app dev, NBP. He's got a book out as well, Sam's Teach Yourself WPF in 24 Hours. That's got to be a full 24-hour day, though. Right?
Full 24 hours, yeah.
And you can see his blog information, the Twitter information as well, and he's got open source up there as well, bringing freedom to your WPF and Silverlight apps, and co-founder of Silverlight Arcade. You want to tell us about that a little bit?
Sure. Silver Arcade is it's sort of the YouTube of Silverlight games, is the way I describe it. It's a place where you as a developer can create your own games without talking to us, post your games on the site, and they are up there for people to play. And Bill Reese, actually, who you mentioned, is one of the three founders of that.
So. All right, cool. And the third is?
Rob Eisenberg, who is another Silverlight MVP.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to turn it over to you, and you can go ahead and start talking about importing Adobe Asset.
Okay, so I want to talk, as you said, about the importing abilities for... I want to wear the hat.
Oh, baby. Now we're talking.
Yeah.
We'll put both of them on.
I feel
safer. We got dual action here,
somehow.
Okay?
So, now I'm one of those mythical creatures, actually, that has one foot in the design world, that some people call me a dev-signer, where I'm really about 70%, 80% developer and the rest. So I kind of have my feet in both sides, and often the task of importing the artwork from the art group, design group, falls into my lap. So I'm really excited about some of these features. So specifically what I want to show you is how you can take source files from Photoshop and from Illustrator and bring those easily into Blend and actually make that into real working software. So if you don't know already, we mentioned it before, but you can get Blend 3 from the Expression Try It URL that's up there right now.
Yep.
Specifically, too, I want to say, and these import features, they're built into Blend. I mean, this is default. So what problems do we solve here? Trying to translate a Photoshop file is difficult. And one on a Hurting Code podcast recently, I heard someone say that designers often think of us developers as compilers for their Photoshop files. So I think it was Jeremy Miller to credit the right person on that.
That's a good way of putting it.
So, and that's, it's difficult. It's difficult. So this feature allows you to, you no longer have to manually translate that source art into the real software. Additionally, it allows you to manipulate that source art in Blend after you've done it. So the layers, shapes, text, they're all retained during the import process. And overall, this is really about making it easier to work with designers and developers. We want a better streamlined relationship, so that's really what we're going at here. I also listed a few additional resources here for you. Of course, the Expression site itself, but in addition, Sunny Pixels blog has some good tutorials on this exact feature, as well as Silverzine. So, so our very first example is that I'm going to take a WPF application, and maybe my design team has said, hey, I need to have a background for this application that was going to stretch with the window. And they've given me some fancy art in Illustrator. And what I have here is actually something that I've downloaded off of a stock image site, but it might have come from a design team. A very standard just vector image that we're going to bring into Blend. So we'll let that open up. And there it is. And we can see that it has a certain structure here. There's a group and several paths that make this up. And if we mouse over it, we see all the different little bits being highlighted. So now I already have an application opened in Blend. This is a WPF application. And I want to make that art the background for my main window. So I'm going to go up to the File menu. I'm going to say Import Adobe Illustrator File. I'm going to locate my source, which I have right here. Notice it's a native Illustrator file. Open that up. Now, the wonderful thing about this, too, is you don't actually have to have Illustrator installed for it to work. Mm-hmm. So the art team gives me the file, and there it is. Now, I have this, and I can run my application. And we'll notice that it doesn't really quite behave the way we want it to. If I maximize it, you see we have white space on the screen over here, and it doesn't change at all. And that's not the behavior we really wanted from the art. So now it's my job as the developer to fix that. So how do we do that? Well, over here in our object panel, object and timeline panel, we can see layer one is the element that we've brought in. Now that matches all these layers match these same layers that are in the Illustrator file. And that'll become more obvious when we do the Photoshop example. Now what I want to do though is I want to highlight that root element I brought in, which is actually background, matches the name of the file I brought in. And I go to Tools on the menu bar, Make Brush Resource, and then I'm going to choose specifically the Make Drawing Brush. Now I can give this a name like My Super, because we like the word super.
Right? Yeah, Super My Preview super, and...
My Super Background. Okay. I'm going to store that in the application and say okay. Now that's added that to my application's resources. So if I go and look in the Resources tab under App, I'll see there's a little thumbnail of my background. Now I don't actually need this element in my page anymore because we've converted it over to a resource that's copied it. So I'm going to delete it here. Oops. There we go. But now what I want to do is select my window, go to the Properties panel, let Blend think for a second. Okay. And then over here in my background brush, I'm going to choose a resource. Now it's automatically going to stretch that to fill my window, and if I save it and run it, we'll notice that it now stretches with the window. So very quickly we went from the source art to something that really worked, that met our specifications.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
All right. Now, for the next cool little tidbit there, we're going to bring in a Photoshop file. So let's say this. Let's say our scenario is that we are going to build a Silverlight application this time, and it's going to be a photo gallery of some sort. And so our designers have given us some source art in a Photoshop file, as well as some art in an Illustrator file, and we want to bring those together into Silverlight. How will we do that? So first, let me open up my photo gallery. And you can see here the way my photo gallery looks directly in Photoshop. So also over here, we can see in the layers, we can see that our artist was very kind to us and organized this file so that various parts of the UI of the mockup are grouped together in these folders so we can turn them on and off. And inside of those, there may even be additional elements that are named. When you're working with a design team, that's something you really want to encourage, is to name the elements so that when you bring it over into Blend, you'll be able to navigate the structure that you brought in. So now let's bring that into Blend. So I go back to Blend. Actually, we're going to close this project and open my Silverlight project that I've already have set up. It's called Photo Gallery. It's a standard, basic Silverlight 3 project. I haven't done anything to it.
So basically the key there was to give a name right to each one of those objects in the Photoshop file.
Exactly.
From the designer standpoint. And then once you got that, now the rest is going to be programmable. Right?
Exactly.
Blend.
Exactly. Yep. So I go to File, Import Adobe Photoshop File, pick my PSD and open that. Now this is slightly different from what we had with Illustrator. So when we did this with Illustrator just threw it into Blend for us. With Photoshop, it's going to ask us more questions. So you notice this is a preview of what our import is going to look like. We see those same layers exist that we saw in the Photoshop file. Now, Blend also is going to tell us what sort of layer it's going to bring this in as. For example, if we look at the menu, we mouse over it, we actually get little previews of it. The menu, though, has an icon here that tells me this is going to be a text layer. So we know that Blend is going to bring that in as text and treat it as text. If we look over here, we see that this is an image layer, so it's going to come in as a bitmap. It'll actually turn that into a PNG file and put that in a directory for us for our app to consume. Now, with this particular one, we also notice that Blend is warning us, saying that this particular element in Photoshop has some features that Blend does not support. So this is using a stroke style, and that's not supported. So if we look real quick, take a quick peek back at our Photoshop, we'll notice that around this main image, there is a border, and that Blend is not showing that to us on our graphic here. That border is not present because it's not supported. So you have to be aware there are limitations to what Blend can bring in, and that's something you want to just work with your art staff, your design staff to accommodate. Now I'm also going to not bring in this this button right here, because we have more art for that. Actually, I don't remember where I put it, so we're just going to keep going.
So you see these are basically XAML objects, right, is what you have imported here?
It will be when we're done.
Okay, that's where you're going with this, all right?
Yep. So here we are in Blend, and you can see it looks almost identical to what we had in Photoshop. And if we look over here in our object and time line, we will see the same exact groups that we had in Photoshop. And if we mouse over these and click on these, we'll see the elements highlighted in Blend. So it preserves that structure. Now, one thing that's useful to note is that by default, Photoshop is going to show these in the reverse order, with whatever is in the bottom. The lowest Z order is going to be at the bottom of the stack. Highest Z order is going to be the top. By default, Blend actually brings in a little backwards. So you see, for example, my footer is near the top. Over here, my footer is near the bottom. Not a big deal. You can actually change that behavior in Blend by clicking this little Z order icon here, just to help you get around. So now I brought this in, and all these elements here are going to map to various bits of XAML. So we can take a quick peek at the XAML, and we'll see. I mean, there's too much of this to go into. One thing that's important to note, though, is that Photoshop doesn't understand dynamic layouts. So Photoshop, when you create something, everything is really static. So when you bring that into Blend, Blend has to accommodate for that. So it's going to use canvas elements, which means that all your elements are statically positioned. There's no flow built into it. So that might be something you have to do to work with a designer, say, how is this supposed to expand when things change? How does it grow? But I want to show you one more little quick bit. Let's say that this button here, and from Photoshop, the artist flatten this button so it has no depth, but we actually want to make this button do something. So what we'd like is to create a control template for a button. So I'm going to delete that flat button there. I'm going to come over here, and I'm going to just create a button directly in Blend. A little bit of a rendering glitch there, you notice, which is my video drivers not playing nice. So there's our button. Now what I want to do is I want to create a template for this button that's based on some art out of an Adobe Illustrator file. So the first thing I need to do, actually, is go to the button and say Edit Template when I right-click on it, then Edit a Copy. And this is going to create, let's say, My Fancy button. This is going to create a template for us in Blend. And now we see over here in our Objects and Timeline that we have the actual markup or the actual elements that constitute that button. We're going to want to exchange that with the Illustrator file that we bring in.
Okay.
So one important thing to note here is that if I go to File and say Import Illustrator File and pick my Play button, where did it go? Nothing happened. I expect it to show up in my template. It's not there. It actually, when you import, it always is going to put it back on the root layer. So this guy showed up right there. Even though I was editing the template, it actually put it back in the root layer. So I'm gonna pick that, zoom in a little bit so I can get around and take this guy. We can move him around. Oops. There we go. So there's my button. So what I want to do now is I want to make it so I can change out this arrow. I want to take this button, make it into a template so I can change out the arrow. Maybe it's going to be a pause, maybe a stop button. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually copy that, Control C, and then I'm going to go back over to my button that has the template in it. Select it, right-click. I'm going to say Edit Template, Edit Current, because we already made a copy of it. Now I'm back into that. Now this is giving me an Edit in Place feature here. Okay, so I'm going to paste that fancy art into my template. So now I see it in my template, but it's just thrown in there. We need to fix this up, clean it up a little bit. So how can we do that? Well, first of all, the content presenter, you see that as an element here. This is a special WPF Silverlight thing. The content presenter is the part of our button that actually is going to contain the content. By default, it contains the text button. We're going to change it so it contains either an arrow or something else. So we really want this content presenter to be into our play button. So if we look at play button, it has various layers. This one symbol is where our arrow is. So we're going to take this content presenter, going to drag it over here into the symbol group. And we can then actually delete the button that's there. And really, I don't need to have in that group. I'm going to bring it up into the button layer itself, and then I'm going to just delete that. Now, I do want it to be underneath the gloss there a little bit, and I didn't drop it in quite the right spot. There we go. So now, there's our button. Now, blend sometimes adds margins and things that we don't really want, so I'm going to delete some of that to help center our button up. And also, I'm going to right-click on our outermost element here and change that to a grid because, like I said, it's going to bring everything as a canvas. So I can say change layout type to grid. And now notice our button content presenter is actually centered now in the middle of our button, which is exactly where we want it. The final thing I need to do is I'm going to get rid of all of the old button here. Now, of course, if your design team is working on this, they would provide you all the various button states of hover and disable and whatnot. For us, though, we're going to keep it simple. Okay? And just for the sake of making this easy, I'm going to hard code a size here so that we can... I happen to know the art was at 127. Okay. Now I'm going to go back out to this, my button here. Notice this was my original source art that I imported. It's still on the screen right here. I'm going to delete that because we don't need that anymore. But my real button is right here. So I'm going to click it. And it still remembered its hard-coded width. We don't want that. I'm going to reset that. And then our button should look normal there. And oops, I forgot one minor thing. Let's bring back in that file that we just deleted because we want to copy the arrow from that file. So it's going to put that up here in the upper corner. So let me zoom out to make it a little easier. Now with this guy here, I can actually come in and pick that, and notice it highlights that in my tree. I can actually drag that path down here into my button, just drop it on my button, and notice that Blend is telling me it's going to replace the string that's currently in my button with the path I'm dragging onto it. Now watch my real button there in the lower corner. Notice the arrow appeared there. Yeah. Now, and also notice that in Blend it really is a button element now that has that template. So that's a quick way to take some of the source art. I'm going to actually put a little bit of margin on that so it is centered. That's a quick way to get real art and make it into something useful within Blend.
So you're saying now designers and developers can actually go out to lunch together? Is that what you're saying?
I'd like to think that. I hope so.
How about that, huh? Woo-hoo, yeah. That is great. This is great. All right, well, thanks once again for having me on the show, man. I really appreciate you,
thank you.
Helping out. And once again, round of applause, Christopher.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, so our final segment of the show, final tool tip. Very excited to have David Silverlight here with us. You know, I invited Dave originally just to do the community update piece at the end. And I said, yeah, you can show your user group site, you know, and talk about the Silverlight user group you got and you know, amongst all the other things we're going to be talking about in the community update. So he showed it to me, and my jaw dropped. I said, wow, man, that is like a really cool interface you got on that site. And... I says, you know, how about you maybe demo that, you know, and some of the code that went behind it. Well, as it turns out, this is a full-fledged project, right, that you guys have put up on CodePlex.
Yes.
And furthermore, it's built on best practices, which is just great. I mean, you know, we're always looking for best practices in terms of the architecture. I'm going to let you talk about the architecture, but basically the pain point here is you want to create a website. Now, this one here is geared toward user groups. But you could easily extend that to any kind of group setting. But more importantly is the architecture that's in place, right? And really on how you can adapt that to pretty much anything in terms of a web type application for you. And so it really does provide, you know, you want to get a good solid code base, right, to derive your work from. And, you know, those are hard to find a lot of times. So we came across this, and it's a diamond in the rough. And I think we're really going to enjoy this session. A little bit more on David. He's been... an MVP for a while now, and David is now a client app MVP. He's got a great website for communitycredit.com. We'll be talking a little bit more about that in the community update, but those that are contributing to the developer community, make sure you check that out and get credit for it, right? You might get some stupid prizes, something like
yes.
that, right? Okay. And XML Pit Stop, you've had that for a while. Great website and XML needs. He's got the Tweetmaster Silverlight cloud-based Twitter client. You got independent consulting services, the Silverlight Group, HeadGeek is your Twitter, and then you can see his LinkedIn and MVP profiles. So, David, I'll let you go ahead and take it away.
All right. Thanks, Russ. Well, the Silverlight User Group website starter kit is codenamed Something Spatial. It's essentially a framework and a code base to make it easy for you to build a website for your user group. So it really all started back when, you know, we were building a website for our own user group, and since our user group is a Silverlight user group, it seemed only fitting that our website should be a Silverlight-based website. So we started building the site, and pretty early on, you know, being the community-oriented folks that we are, we decided to open it up as a community project. You know, we thought we could have source code for our site, but, you know, it could come out great, but we could really take it to the next level and really open it up as a community project, get a lot of people involved, and, you know, build something really great. So our goals for this project were really three. Our first was to basically to create a code base to make it easy for you to build your own website in Silverlight. Second was to really release a good, solid set of code that's built on best practices that you could extend it and really customize it and make it your own website. And last but not least, one of our goals was to make it a very community-oriented learning experience. Mm-hmm. As somebody who gives a lot of presentations, a lot of times I'll get asked, you know, how do I get started? How do I get my hands wet? You know, what's the best way to learn this technology? And my personal philosophy is that, you know, really the best way to learn is to just get your hands wet. You know, sometimes just getting into a real-world application is the only way to really learn it. You know, there are many times where I've gone through demos and white papers and thought I knew something, but then only until I really got into it did I really realize, you know, the little minor facets of the technology. So, you know, making this an open source project on CodePlex allows people to just, if they want to get their hands wet on it, they can just kind of sign up and join the team. It's a lot of fun. So a little bit about the architecture that we've chosen for this project. We're using SQL Server Express for our back end. It's built on the MVP design pattern, as well as also a number of Silverlight best practices design patterns. In the project itself, we have a number of base controls. We have a number of views as well, you know, that you can really basically add your own views to extend the project and add new content to it. From the UI standpoint, Ariel LaRue had designed the initial implementation, and you'll see, after I show you the demo in a moment, why it's codenamed Something Spatial. Ariel did just a really great job, and she really has a very, you know, hands-on approach in terms of the way that she approaches design. You know, when we're all discussing the architecture, I mean, the layout, you know, the sky and clouds really came into it. And a lot of times people will Bing cloud images and try to find the best one and use that as their starting point. But, you know, in this case, for example, she'll go outside and actually look at clouds and, you know, see their movement and try to incorporate that into the design of our application. So one other thing to keep in mind from the design standpoint is a lot of the people that are involved in the project are all either user group leaders or people that are very active in user groups. So we tried to really approach it from the end user's perspective. So let me jump over to the actual website itself. All right, so I'd like to demo what the project looks like. All right, this is our Something Spatial project. You'll notice that we went with kind of a floating cloud panel. As we're navigating through the content on the website, it has that floaty, cloudy goodness to the website and gives it kind of a theme that we were really all initially shooting for. There are different contents. If the cloud panel is actually something that I'm going to really step through in just a moment, but you'll see that we really have a number of different panels. You know, initially we have our next event. We show our past events. You know, all clouds of different sizes. If I wanted to go back one, you know, we could kind of have the clouds spanning backwards and forwards. If we look at our news, we see that we're able to get also good use of screen real estate by having a flipping control in any of our controls that we choose. That way we can get really more content in the same area. One area that we have down here is a Twitter control. That way, you know, one of the goals was really to see, you know, tweets from members of our website and just kind of see them, you know, at any given time. Another aspect of the site is, you know, the About Us. You know, so at any point, you know, you really know where you are. So what I'd like to do is really go through the project itself and also one area that a lot of people find pretty interesting, which is our floating panel control. So if we step into our project, we can take a look to see how our project is architected. So if we take a look at our project, you know, we have a number of different folders here. Our assets folder is something that we use to store our different style XAML files. We have our custom controls, which we're actually going to step through in a moment. This contains really kind of the base controls for our project. So in this case, with our first theme, which is the floating cloud theme, we have an animated cloud panel control, which is pretty cool. We'll see how that works. We also have a number of different views. So as we want to add content, we see that, you know, once again, it is targeted at user groups. So a lot of the content here we'll see is really aimed at user group websites, but you really could extend it to any type of a group or virtually any kind of a website. Mm-hmm. So what I'd like to walk through first is our cloud panel. In fact, before I even walk through it, let's take a look a little bit about the architecture. Now, the cloud panel control consists of a couple of different controls that depend on each other. At the very base level, we have an animating panel base control, and that inherits from the panel control. In a sense, the animating panel base control is the animation engine. It's really responsible for getting things from point A to point B, and really all the calculations and the formulas for handling the actual animations of the objects on the form. The animating cloud panel control is really responsible for moving the different panels, you know, from to different parts of the screen as the user, you know, clicks forward and backwards. You know, it has different methods like roll back, roll forward, and within each one of the panels, we've got a content control. Now, the content control is responsible essentially for just displaying the content. Whatever content you put in there, its only job is to display the content, and it has other dependency properties that the other classes hook into to really handle how that content is moved around the form. Now, if we go into our default page, we can see how we would really add code to this cloud panel control. So the cloud panel is really our main control here. And as we're adding content, we're really adding, you know, one or more different content controls. And the more content controls we add, the more panels will rotate in that floaty carousel-like fashion across the screen. So we have our content control. We have a display content section within it. And inside of our display content, we could display either information from RSS. We could display just a standard control. In this case, we might be using RIA Web Services to really retrieve our data. And you know, we have another control called past meetings. We could really continue to add as many panels as we want. You know, in this case, we have our Twitter control, which is another RSS feed that shows the latest Twitter content and the latest tweets from people in our group. In this case, we have a blog role control, and we really could kind of extend it on and on. Mm-hmm. So if we were to run this, let's say we wanted to add a new event. You know, we have another meeting coming up. Let's go into our admin section. Now, the admin section is built on .NET RIA services. And let's show this. If I click on the admin section, it brings us to a page where on our left we have, you know, our different events, and on the right we have the details if we wanted to edit those. If I wanted to add a new event, I could say, let's say next month I'm going to talk on what's new in Silverlight. I could add what's new in Silverlight.
By David Silverlight.
And let's say we'll be in November, the third Thursday of every month, so it'll be November 19th. It will be at our normal meeting location, and we'll discuss. And so on. So once we click OK, we're finished here. So if we go back to our website, We can see now that basically the new event that we added is really added back here. And
how cool is that, huh? There you go. Thank you. Well, that's great. So you came full circle with this. We saw the original demo of the site. Then you went into some of the code, some of the XAML, where you would place those entries, and actually the admin piece will automatically create those entries in the XAML file, basically, is what happened here.
Yes, everything, exactly. Everything's database-driven, comes out to the database and loads it into the XAML file, correct.
So if someone new to you wanted to get a good architecture for their application, would this be a great example to start out with?
Yeah, that's really what one of our goals was. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the admin functionality, a lot of the groundwork with, you know, like the MVP design pattern and all the plumbing in between, a lot of times will take a while to really do initially. So this gives you a good starting point.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. Well, let's give it up for Mr. David Soloik. I think that's an awesome demo, man. You wanted to mention some of the members on the team real quick before we end this session here?
Yes. Projects like this really don't get to the point that they are without a great team of developers really, you know, like rolling up their sleeves and burning the midnight oil. So the people on the team that I'd really like to recognize are, number one, Ariel LaRue. You know, she did a great job with the current theme and the UX aspect of the website. You know, I was involved in mainly in the admin portion and kind of a little bit overall, kind of as a floater on the project. David Kelly, he did a really incredible job. He actually designed the initial architecture and also designed that cool floating carousel control that you see. Jose Luis Lutore, much like myself, you know, he was very involved on the admin section and, you know, and really overall in all different areas of the project. Rafael Garofalo, he is our database guy, so he helped, you know, basically create the initial database. He's going to be responsible for creating an install, you know, that'll install that database on your machines. And there's really, you know, many other people that have been involved. One person I'd like to mention, Carlos Figuera. He, you know, he's been involved from the very beginning, just kind of in helping to brainstorm and discuss the features that we want to see in the website.
So a great collaborative effort there. Thank you very much for contributing, and all the rest of the folks, thank them on our behalf as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so again, I got David Soloik here. He's going to help us do the community wrap-up. David, I know you're really involved in the community a lot, and let's go ahead and get right to it. So here we go. Take it away, David.
All right. Well, there's a number of really great shows on Channel 9 that you can actually find on the Toolshed areas.
Yep, and we got the Toolshed site itself, which is the resource page with download links to all of the tools that we were showing in the episodes, and then the shows page itself, which lists all of the tool tips that we've created from the episodes and the episodes themselves.
Right, so if you want to get them all in one spot, you have found the right location.
Yep.
So there's a lot of great shows on Channel 9. 10.4 is a show really focusing on Visual Studio 2010 and .NET Framework 4.0. Ping, if you haven't seen the show, it's also a really excellent show. The name Ping actually comes from, you know, what do people at Microsoft actually ping each other with? So you get a lot of things that they find to be really exciting information.
Very entertaining.
Yes, it is.
That's a great show.
Arcast TV is really focused for those of us who are in the architectural space. GeekSpeak is a weekly talk radio show, and I mean, who doesn't need a radio show on fellow geeks?
That's it.
A beautiful thing. And last but not least, the Continuum show is Adam Kinney's show. Discusses a lot of the latest technologies in .NET, Serverlight, WPF, and you know, kind of keeps things from, you know, in a very cutting edge perspective. This is communitycredit.com, one of my favorite sites. Our motto is a week of stupid prizes to smart people. And for those people that are very active in the community, you basically log the work that you do, and the ones, and every category has a certain amount of points, and the ones with the most activity win different valuable prizes.
I think attending a code camp was in there too.
Attending a code camp is actually one of the very higher value categories.
You're already on a roll right here.
That's right.
That's right. And don't forget to check out the Hall of Fame area, right?
Yes, the Wilson's Children's Hospital has a great cause going. It's actually a 55-mile marathon. The 50, man. Yes.
That's a lot of miles.
It's in recognition of their 55th year anniversary.
Yep.
If you want to find out more information about it, go to wolfson55.org. It really is a tremendous organization and a very good cause. I highly recommend it.
And any of the extra proceeds from this Code Camp are being donated there as well. So round of applause to the Code Camp program as well. Yeah, this is about our Microsoft Partner Program. Anybody here work for a partner? Show of hands, a few of you do. So a growing number of our developer community is involved in the partner space. So if you are taking advantage of some of these links, the Partner Huddle, the .NET Developers Program, there's a US Team blog, and the MSDN East Coast News. John McClellan from Microsoft is a part of our team here in the East, and he's our contact for working in the partner space. So you can check out his blog as well and his Twitter. So some great resources there for partners.
.NET Rocks. I don't know how many people here have seen .NET Rocks, the radio show. It's really a tremendous show. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's go to .NETRocks.com. You're going to get a chance to listen to the latest episode.
What episode are we seeing? 432, I think it was? All right. So we did a little interview a few months back as well. So, all right.
Excellent. The Developer Roundtable is actually a .NET user group that meets in Second Life. It's a virtual group. How many people have been to one of their meetings?
All right, good thing we're bringing it up, huh? That's good.
You definitely have to check it out. I've actually given presentations and I've attended their meetings, and it gives you a whole new perspective, and it's just a really, really fun experience, and you really get to learn, you know, a lot of great knowledge, just like you do even in some of the meetings that you attend in person.
The good news is you don't have to leave home. The bad news, you don't get free pizza.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, so...
So there's a couple of events coming up. So we have a number of MSDN events, the Tiki Hut Show.
Myself and Joe Healy.
So there's quite a number of SQL Saturdays coming up. If you haven't attended a SQL Saturday, there's a really, as you can see, there's, you know, coming up, you know, May, June, August. You know, definitely a great event to attend. If you're into Windows mobile devices, I think you'll be really happy to see that there is now WinMo Dev Camp. The next one is coming up in December 5th in Tampa. Thrive is, I think, something just really good for this particular time. It really approaches the state of the economy and what people need to do to really keep yourself more marketable, how to build new skills, how to really help to promote yourself. Connected Show is at connectedshow.com. And it's really a great show that really focuses on basically connecting both Microsoft technologies and also non-Microsoft technologies, and really, you know, connecting the two of them together.
Yeah, my peer Peter Lodati does that up in the Northeast.
Great. So Ramp Up, if you haven't been to Ramp Up yet, it's a great resource for really basically ramping up your skills. You know, if you're looking for training and certification resources, you know, definitely check out, you know, Microsoft.com/Ramp Up.
MSDN.com/Ramp Up.
Mm-hmm. There's also BizSpark, which, you know, if you have a small business, it offers free software, which I think, you know, for a small business owner, it really is, you know, very much of a value. And there's also DreamSpark, which offers, you know, a great free software if you're a student as well. Code Camps. We all love Code Camps. We're having to be filming this here at a Code Camp in Jacksonville. See, there's really a number of Code Camps coming up, including one in February in my own neck of the woods in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, recently announced, so more details to come on that.
Great. So as you can see here, there are really quite a bit of, you know, different really great resources. You have a community megaphone that really has, you know, a very solid set of events and upcoming you know, events in your area. At local user groups, you have, you know, different resources. If you really want to find out what's going on, you know, a very good starting point is just, you know, visiting your local user group. You know, CodeZone is a really, you know, it's a tremendous resource. So is MSDN. Got it right this time.
Yep.
MSDN.microsoft.com/flash, and that always has really a great listing of, like, what are the new and exciting events coming up. And of course, you know, some of the great resources are people like the great Russ Festina's website, which is RussTools.net. Joe Healy's site, DevFish. Joe happens to be the DE in my area, and he is very well known as being the premier DE,
mm-hmm.
And Jeff Barnes' site as well.
David, I want to thank you very much. Give it up for David. Round of applause. Thank you. Remember, you have to know the code to get in the shed.
Know the code!
I'm a PC, I'm a PC, I'm a PC! Thanks, everybody. Let's give it up. Come on up, speakers. Come on up. Move in here a little bit. Come on up. Give it up for Jim Lloyd down there. David Silverlake. Chris Birkenhead. Last but not least, with the same trophies and all of our volunteers here helping out.
How you been? It's nice to see you. It's been a while now. So how you been? We used to hang on the corner, looking for trouble, trying to fit in. Forget all the good times and all the bad times that we spent. I can't believe we made it this far. We went from bar to bar looking for sin. Ooh, you're my old friend. Ooh, you're my old friend. Touch somehow every now and then. My wife and kids are alone at home. I call them on the phone to talk to them. Ooh, you're my old friend. Ooh, you're my old friend. You're my old friend. It's been a while now, so how you been?